just barely began to scratch the surface of a somewhat difficult sugya, at the sugya of Kavua. So let's just backtrack for a moment, just to really begin to appreciate the question that the Rishonim asked that really gets the entire sugya underway. We mentioned on Wednesday that there is a din min haTorah, when you have a situation that even though at least it appears to be statistically that you have a rov, the example being 10 spores, nine of them selling kosher, one of them selling treif, and we know that if you find a piece of meat on the floor, in fact, you are allowed to rely on that rov, and you're permitted to eat that piece of meat. Nevertheless, if the piece of meat has not exited the stores, but rather you have entered into the store, and now you walk into one of the stores, and you're not sure, 20 minutes later, which store you went into, the Gemara says that you are not permitted to rely on rov, and that's the parish of Kavua. This is a din min haTorah. There's no question about this. A din d'oraisa, the Gemara derives from Sukkim. Whether it's an absolute chiddush, we cannot even begin to fathom what it's about, or whether we had Mr. Brent's got a fascinating statistical angle to it. At the end of the day, the din is d'oraisa. At the end of the day, is based on Sukkim, and there is such a parish of Kavua. So the bottom line is, when the Isser is Poresh, never rely on rov. When you go to it, then you don't rely on it. So it's based on this that Tosis poses the question, but take a look at the fifth of the Ramakomas, which really, really gets us to your rolling. Tosis on the fifth of the Ramakomas in Chulin Tzadiyam and Aleph, Sveiko Osir, the Chol Kavua Kemech Tzabech Tzadomi. Fahadik Chaimala Midaraisa, Chad Betray Motil. Tosis, wait a second. Everything we've been talking about for the last 6 months seems to fly in the face of Kavua. Because if you think about it, a regular case of bittul is always relying on rov. When you have three salamis, two of them are kosher, one of them is treif, you're relying on rov. Even when you have shishim, the additional fact of shishim is just to negate any time, but the real mevatel according to many is the rov. So every shayla of tilchus tarovus we've been talking about since the beginning of the year is always falling back on rov. Yes, that was the question. Isn't every tarovus, isn't every application of the rov a flagrant violation of the principle of kavua? Because the dovra osur is the mekoma only. The three pieces of salami are on the table. I am walking over to those salamis and taking out one. Why do we say with the issus kavua mekoma, you can't apply rov? That is the question. That is not just Tosus kasha, that's the Rashi's kasha. Anyway, everybody for the last 1,000 years, probably before that also, have been dealing with this question. How can you have these two dinim d'oraisa that seem to be outright contradictory to one another? On the one hand, Kavua screams out to us that rov only applies when the item is poreish to you, but not when you go and take it. When the issus kavua b'mekomo, that's a problem. Yet every bittul b'rov, by definition, the issus kavua b'mekomo. So comes Tosfos with a very, very, very simple distinction. Back to that Tosfos for a minute, the fifth of the Rambam comes. The had the kaima in the middle of the first line, the kaima with the rice, the chad betray botil. Hanuhecha shema urav, the eno nikar ha iser. Avalhocha yadua is a beduchte. Chanusa bechers besan veima. Says Tosfos, the answer is very, very simple. In order for kavua to be applied, there are a few criteria that have to be met. One is, it has to be an Isser Kavua B'mkomo. The Isser is not budging, the Isser is not moving. I'm going to the Isser. But more than that, says Tosfos. It's not enough just simply to have the Isser Kavua B'mkomo. It has to be an Isser Hanikar Kavua B'mkomo. The original model of Kavua was the case of the 10 stores. The Treifa store is Kavua B'mkomo as well as Nikar B'mkomo. I know exactly which store is treif. The store that says on it, Caribbean Burgers. That's the treif store. Every other store on the block has an RCBC to a down window, and that one doesn't. So I know which is which. So the issue is not just kavua b'mkomo, it's kavua v'nikar b'mkomo. That is one of the criteria that is necessary for the parasha kavua to kick in. The minute that doesn't exist, the game's over. Kavua is finished. That's not kavua. Says Tosfos, every bittul by definition is not nikar b'mkomo. If it would be nikar b'mkomo, then it would be bittul b'rov, then it would be a tarovus. So for the mere fact that we have a non-nikar iser, out of the three salamis, true, the salamis aren't budging, I'm walking to the salamis, since the salamis are not nikar b'mkomam, I don't know which is the Isser. Al zeh lo nema chidusha teruka. That's Tosfos' suggestion. That explains the difference. Why, on the one hand, there's an absolute halacha of kavua, the other hand, there's an absolute halacha of bittul. The answer is very simple. In one case, the Isser is nikar, in the other case, the Isser is not nikar. But now, Tosfos has a lot of explaining to do, because there is a Gemara in Maseches Zvachim that seems to apply kavua even in situations where the Isser is not nikar b'mkomo. So we have to learn somewhat of a difficult sugya in the third and the fourth of Rabbi Kamos, and combining those two statements of Chazal, we will begin to appreciate Tosfos's challenge that they're about to raise upon themselves. So they started off with a challenge: how do you explain the principle of bittul in light of kavua? They came up with an answer: nikar versus not nikar, and now they're about to challenge that suggestion. Let's take a look at the third, we're going back to the third of the Rambam Kamos. It's a Mishnah in the beginning of the eighth paragraph of Masech HaZvachim. Kol HaZvachim shenis arvu b'chatos ha-nesas o b'sho'a nisko v'lachas b'ribo yibusu kubun. A person has a bunch of karbonas, a lot of animals, all supposed to be brought as a karbon, all the animals look the same, and one animal gets mixed into this batch. Everything's alive. One animal gets mixed into the batch, and this animal is possible to be brought as a korban. It is so possible that there is nothing that can ever rectify it. But it's unlike, let's say, a psul of Baal Mum, which is easily recognizable. Unless you have Ruach HaKodesh, you would never be able to tell that there's anything wrong with the animal. There's nothing physically wrong with the animal. But the animal has been subject to something that is possible to be Al Gabi HaMizbeach. It's possible to be Al Gabi HaMizbeach, the own one. There is nothing that can ever rectify this animal. And now we have a big problem, because now we have a tarot with 1,000 animals all ready to be brought as carbonos, and one animal gets snuck in there that is now going to ruin it for everybody. What are some of these examples of psulim that are not discernible? So the Mishnah gives two of them. One is what's called the chatas hamesa. Chatas hamesa means I designated to bring a korban chatas, and certain things happen to the korban chatas that make it no longer able to be brought. One thing that could have happened is the owner of the korban chatas may have died. So now the chatas retains its kedusha, which was called the chatas shemesa ba'aleha. Once the owner dies, you can't get a kapara. There's no kapara lebesim. So the chatas cannot be brought. There is no ability to be pulled in the chatas. You can't redeem the chatas. Even if it subsequently gets a mum, it's a special category of Allah, it's called Chatas HaMesa. That Chatas has to die. There's nothing that can be done with that Chatas. You can never bring it as a korban, you can never use it again as chulin. It's finished, it's done. That's one example. But other examples of Chatas HaMesa, for example, say a person designated an animal to be brought as a Chatas, then they lost the animal, and they went ahead and they brought another animal. So they were Yotze, the mitzvah Chatas, and then the first one gets found. So that's Chatas She'ovda. If it's kapu baleva acher, that's also chatas amesa. Because you can't volunteer to bring a korban chatas. You can't bring it as a chatas. You can't be told it. You can't shech it as chulin. There's nothing you can do with it. There's a special halacha that it's what's called the chatas amesa. Actually, there in the Mishnah, there was a Tzmura list of, there are five examples of chatas amesa. All of these dinim, the entire sugi, the entire parish of chatas amesa, is halacha moshe mesina. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Tzmura, this was all halacha moshe mesina. It's interesting. The Gemara tells us that the intricacies, that complicated sugi in the end of the Tabura, the Chatas HaMesas, about what's called lost, and what's called found, and what's called you gave birth, and then you gave birth, all kind of convoluted scenarios of Chatas HaMesas. The Gemara says that the basic halachas of Chatas HaMesas are all Nimsul of Moshe B'Sinai, and they were actually, some of them were forgotten right after Moshe Rabbeinu died. Fascinating, I feel, the Gemara says, that as soon as Moshe Rabbeinu died, this was part of those halachas that there was a little bit of a confusion about. The first generation of the Tamir Chachamim, so they reconstructed, they refigured out, they put together back again the pieces of these halachas that were somehow had been lost to some degree the very, very early on, right after the death of Moshe Rabbeinu. So these dinim, all the intricacies of Chatas HaMesas, are halacha Moshe Mesina. Again, they're complicated, very, very convoluted scenarios that to talk about the details of Chatas HaMesas, but the basic structure of the halacha is halacha Moshe Mesina. I think I've told over the story in the past that when we first got married, so I was learning Maseches Tamura at the time, and shortly after we got married, about a couple of weeks after we got married, we were sitting with my wife together at our apartment in the Heights, sitting in Shal Shiris, And she posed the question to me. She said, you know, she knows that I'm learning all day, but maybe I can like fill her in like what I'm learning all day. Like just give like a taste of like some of the, like, the topics, some of the issues that some of the things that I spend my time with here. And I go away in the morning, come back at night. You know, she knows them. She thinks I'm learning, hopes I'm learning. But she wanted to get like a little feel as to what I'm learning. So I was learning some of the intricacies of Chata Samesis at the time. Some of the, what we call the backwoods of a sentence, Tamura. So I started to explain to her. I said, okay, you don't really want to know, but I'll explain this to you. You know, a very complicated sukkah and tamura about the person is not fish a carbon, and then the carbon gets lost, and the carbon is, and then the animal gets pregnant, it's a baby, it's a blood chatas, it's a chatas a mesa, it's a this, you know, you spend a lot of time in all the intricate lumbas of chatas a mesa. I remember she looked at me for a few minutes and she said, you know what, I trust you. She said, how about you do what you do, and I'll do what I'll do, and you can keep the sukkahs to yourselves, it's perfectly okay. So it's been, we had a working relationship. Aksha Blanner, 26 years, with that same motto. She usually doesn't question me too much to hear the alumnus. So we're back to the Sugis of Chattis. 26 years later, we're still learning the Sugis of Chattis and Mesis. So the bottom line is, the Mishnah says in Tvachim that if you have a Chattis and Mesis that gets mixed up with this whole batch of animals, that's going to cause a very, very serious problem. Or if you have a Sharnisko, if an animal killed a person, and that was paskin by the basin of the animal, the animal is Chayav Misa, so the animal is supposed to be killed. But what happened? The animal ran away from Beis Din before they got around to being sokalit. Now that animal is also bano. Once there was a gemar din on it, so you can't check. I'm not allowed to use this animal for anything. I can't bring it as a korban anymore. And now it's potentially going to disqualify the entire batch of animals. So I have 1,000 animals, 999 of them are kosher for korban, and one of them is a chatas mesa or a shardisto. So the Mishnah says, guess what? They're all possible. All the animals are disqualified. End of discussion. They're all possible. So comes the Gemara in the beginning of that parrot and spends about 2 blocks trying to figure out why they puzzle. Why don't we just say this is 3 salamis? This is Bittel Barov. I have 1,000 animals. Again, that's not Nikar. If it was Nikar, I'd just take one out. It's not Nikolai, and I have no idea which is which. But why is this fundamentally different from the model of 3 salamis, 2 kosher, 1 treif? This is 999 kosher to be a carbon and 1 puzzle to be a carbon. So we have the 3 blot, the Gemara finally concludes on the 4th day of Rabbi Kobos. He was says, Balechem Cheshibim Velo Batlei. The Balechayim, animals that are alive, are very, very choshev. And as choshev, they cannot be both though. Now this is something we've seen time and time again. Whenever you have Dvarim Cheshuvim, Dvarim Cheshuvim are not both though. But how do you define Dvarim Cheshuvim? Those are multiple sugyas. Some say that if you have something davar shebeminyan, things that are counted out all the time, that's considered to be a davar chashuv. Some say if you have a chaticha rulis kabin, it's a kind of a piece of meat you would serve to a fancy guest, that's called a davar chashuv. So those are sugyas. We're going to get hopefully some of those sugyas in the next couple of sugyas about some of the details of davar chashuv. Basically, the principle of davar chashuv is a chumra min derabbanan. Min deraisa, it's bottle finish. Doesn't matter how chashuv, how expensive, how much you want it, how much you honor people with it, how much you count it. None of those things really matter. That if it's bottle, it's bottle. As long as it's not nikel yayin, it's bottle. But with the rabbanon, they made a takana that if it's double chashuv, doesn't look right. That doesn't resemble bittul. The idea of bittul, we've said this many times. Bittul is like bittul chametz. It's after the arrows. It's meaningless. It's worthless. What do you mean it's meaningless? It's a very chashuv thing. So one of the barometers to measure chashivos is it alive? It's one thing if it's a dead piece of salami, it's like, yeah, a slice of salami is bottle. But walking around, animals walking around, it's balchai, that's too chashiv for us to say it's bottle. Again, with the raisa, that principle doesn't exist. But with the rabbanon, it's considered to be not susceptible, not subject to the rules of bittul. And that's ultimately the reason for the Mishnah. So that's what the Gemara concludes. After 3 blot of the 8 brachos of Vachim, the Gemara finally concludes that although in the Raisa, you can really offer all the animals, because the one that's quote unquote trait, the one that's quote unquote apostle, is Batel Barov. But with the Rabbanim, we cannot apply Bittul. So now the Gemara asks a new question. The Gemara says back to the 4th of the Ramakamas, the Nimshach, the Nekrim, Chad Minayim, the name is called the Parish, Burba Parish. So the Gemara says, okay, I got it, no problem. You can't say Bittul Barov. So Bittul Barov would have permitted you to use all the animals. That would have been okay. All the animals would have been Mutter. Most of the animals would have been Mutter. Forget Bittul Barov. Let's go down another parish of Barov. Let's say called the parish from a parish. Let's say that the piece that exits from that group has been poresh and called the parsh from a parsh. Whatever exits, whatever leaves, is mutter, not because it's bottle berov, but because it probably came from the rov. Remember, there are different principles of rov, different applications of rov. There's bittel berov when you have a tarobes, and then there's azlinibus when you follow statistical rovs. So let's say, for example, when I have my 10 spores, if the piece of meat that I find on the floor is a very, very chashra piece of meat, it's still okay. I'm allowed to eat that piece of meat. Why? That's not bittel berov. Bittel berov means I have 10 pieces together in one unit, and I want to eat all of them. So then we say, no. If the isser is a double choshev, then you have a problem. Forget about bittel berov. Nobody's talking the language. Bittel berov has long been rejected. Double choshev, double chayim is not both. The nimshah, the chenikim chayim, let's rely on kol deparish, buba parish, which works all the time. That's the most question. Why are you telling me all the animals have to die? Walk over to the barn and take one animal out and say, kol deparish, buba parish. So the Gemara says, nimshach, what are you kidding? Havel a kavua, the chol kavua kemechza mechza dami. He says, you can't do that. You can't walk over to the barn and take away the animal. That's kavua. And that's a problem. That's a huge problem. That's kavua. So the Gemara says, you're 0-2. In this game, you strike out. Two strikes and you're out. The only ways to be matter these kavanos is one of two ways. Either we can rely on bittel berov, it's like the model of the three salamis, that was rejected because of the machoshim. The other model is called the parish buba parish. That's not going to work because that's a problem of kavua. So wait a second. Hold the phone. That's kavua? Why is that kavua? It's not nikar. If it would be nikar, we wouldn't be learning the sugya. It's not nikar. I can't tell which animal is which. Since I can't tell which animal is which, by definition, it's not nikar ayin. If it's not, if the isser is not nikar b'mkoymai, what's for kavua? Taisus just told us a minute ago in Chulin that the whole institution of kavua is predicated on the assumption not only is the isser kavua b'mkoymo, but the isser is kavua v'nikar b'mkoymo. Taisus had to present that to answer the question, how come every bittel is not kavua? So Taisus says, no, to be kavua, it's not enough to be stationary. It has to be stationary plus recognizable. Well, this is not recognizable. So why is this kavua? Why does the Gemara say you can't just simply walk over to the barn, take out an animal? What happened to Taisus' cloud of nikar b'mkoymo? So we go back to the fifth of the Marbe Kamos. So Taisus explains what's going on. It's the second line of Taisus. Tosus knew God's good this sugya. Tosus says, even though the Gemara just said they're not botel, so finally, if you look at the end of the second last line, the ikatam ain't a mishum kavua, and a mishum balchayim the botle, kavon kol davar shadakli bonus. Tosa says, that's not real kavua. It can't be real. The Gemara could not have meant real kavua, because the Gemara meant kavua, but it's missing our condition. What does it mean? The Gemara says kavua. What do you mean it's not real kavua? What is it? So Tosa is in other places, and the later post can explain, but what Tosa's probably meant was as follows. There are two kinds of kavua. There's kavua midaraisa, and there's kavua midarabana. What does that mean? When the item is nikar bimkomo, that is kavua d'oraisa. That's the real model of kavua. When it's nikar, the isim bimkomo, not just stationary, but it's nikar bimkomo as well, that is the kavua d'oraisa. However, when it's not really nikar, but midrabanan, we have to say it's nikar. Why do we have to say it's nikar? Because it's so chashuv. Something that's such a machoshim, I can't turn around and say it's not nikar. In the Torah, I can. But with the Rabbanan, once Chazal and Misaki, the machoshim lo batil, what that basically means is that the machoshim is nikar. Not with the Raisa, but with the Rabbanan. Once the machoshim is nikar, so then it takes on all the status of kavua, not on the level of the Raisa, because it's missing the definition, it's missing the criteria of the Raisa of nikar. But since with the Rabbanan, it has the criteria of nikar, that's called kavua midrabanan. And that's why if you look in your day and something kufiyah, you see this lingo, this lashon in the poskim called kavua d'oraisa and kavua d'rabanan. How do you know whether you have a kavua d'oraisa and kavua d'rabanan? It's very simple, says Tosfos. Everything revolves around nikar versus not nikar. If it's nikar, if the isser is nikar, that's called kavua. If it's not nikar, that's not called kavua. So it says Tosfos that when you have something like the stores where it's mamish nikar la'ayin, it's totally nikar la'ayin, I can see those of the Caribbean and those of the RCBC, it's so that's kavua deraisa. If you walk over to that store and you take something away, that's a problem with deraisa. When you have a ta'aroves, if the ta'aroves is a kind of a ta'aroves, that's such a double choshuv, that nebuch with the rabbanim, we have to say that's like nikur, and we can't ignore it anymore. But with the rabbanim, the misaka, this is also kavua. So kavua deraisa requires nikur deraisa, kavua de rabbanim doesn't really require nikur. That was Tosa's solution to this entire dilemma. So Tosa is not the only Rishon who asked this kasha. The Rashba in the sixth of Maimonides, he asks the identical question of Tosa's and gives a radically different answer. So let's take a look now, skip down to the sixth of the Maimonides. Miyam Toiba, like the Rashba. The cave in the Issa of Ura Beheter, Amrina Be Kavua, Hei Chinash Bechina, Issa Batla Barov. That Issa Kavua, from Echza Mechzalam. He says, Rashba, I don't have the same kasha as Tosa's, identical kasha as Tosa's. How can there be a parasha bittul merov? Every bittul merov, by definition, is a violation of the principle of kavua. I am walking over to the three salamis. That's a problem. So comes the Rashba and says that we're going to skip down a little bit to the last line. Avav b'chol, towards the end of the line. Avav b'chol is a botel. Lo arminen kavua. Da botel hu. What did the Rashba say? Rashba said, no. You know why it's not kavua? Because of bittul merov. What does that mean? Talking circles. Says the Rashba, gavaldik yisod. He said, by the 10 stores, we're not even discussing bittul merov. There's no tarobas, there's no mixture between the kosher store and the treifas store. It's not that we're going to close our eyes and say, okay, now the treifas store is kosher because it's bittul merov. We need bittul merov. There's not even the latest asofik on the treifas store. I know the treifas store is treif. There's no tarobas. In the case of the three salamis, there is a tarobas. Whenever there's a tarobas, the first thing you say is bittul merov. What does bittul merov mean? Let's throw back the previous sugya. Bittul merov means iser nepach nios heter. There's no iser anymore. Once something is bittul merov, it doesn't exist. It's kiman deleisa. Once it doesn't exist, posvak kavua. What kind of store, what kind of kasher recipe, says the Rashba? It's kavua, give hold. How dare you walk over to the three salamis and take a salami? You're going to an isser kavua, says the Rashba. No, I'm not. There's no isser here. Tell me, where's the isser? What do you mean, no isser? I know for a fact that there's a tray for salami in this batch, says the Rashba. I don't care what you know for a fact. The halacha trumps your facts. The halacha bittul is isser nepach lios heter. Once isser nepach lios heter, the game is over. So comes the Rashba and says, the engine that's driving the anti-kavua forces, why isn't every case of the three salamis subject to kavua? So Tosu said, because it's not nikar, that's it. Nikar is one of the conditions in Ilchus kavua. Nikar is one of those rules, kavua is a chidush, el chavu chidusho. So in order to meet the criteria of kavua, it has to meet criteria X, Y, and Z. One of them being, it has to be nikar b'kavua. The issue has to be nikar b'kavua, not just stationary nikar b'kavua. The Rashba says it's also true. Rashba says we could have conceived of kavua even when the issue is not kavua. The only thing, even when the issue is not nikar. The only thing is, says the Rashba, once bittul kicks in, the game is over. And the minute that bittul applies, issa nepach lios heter, there is no issur. When there's no issur, it is ludicrous to discuss kavua. So at the end of the day, both Tosfos and the Rashba ended up with the same two models lahalacha. They both agree the stores is kavua deraisa. They both agree that bittul is not kavua at all. And the question is, what is the line of nimikah? What is the difference between the two? So Tosfos puts the emphasis on nikar iser versus not nikar iser. And the Rashba says, no, that's not the point. The point is, did bittul jumpstart the issue? Was bittul applied or not? If and when bittul applies, then kavua is out to lunch. And now the Rashba would also address the issue of Masechet Zvachim. How come there's kavua in the case of the taroves of zvachim? So the answer is very, very simple. In the case of zvachim, there's no bittul. You know why there's no bittul? Because it's a double chashuv. So with the rabbanon, once if there's no bittul, memela we have to invoke kavua on a derabbanon, the good level. So bein l'tosus, bein l'rashba, The problem in Zvachim with the animals is only a derabbanan problem, no matter what. Because Midda Araisa, Kavua didn't apply here. Either it didn't apply here because the Isser is that Nikar, Bimkaimai, or it didn't apply here because Bito was able to avert the principle of Kavua. But once Chazal pulled the wool out from under us, once Chazal on the Vachtel, the din of Bittel, because of the concern, the consideration of the Mechoshev, once Bittel is no longer applicable, then Memeil were back in Kavua territory. But not really, not Midaraisa. Yes, but Shabeno, he would never say that that's Kavua Deraisa, because it can't be Kavua Deraisa, because it's Bottom Midaraisa. But once Chazal changed the rules and revoked the principle of Bittel because of the concern of the Mechoshev, Memeil, once Bittel is gone, then Kavua kicks in. So at the end of the day, we have a major machlokes, a conceptual machlokes, in terms of practicality. Everyone ends up on the same page. Everyone ends up that midaraisa, there's kavua by the 10 stones. Everyone agrees that whenever you have the salamis, there's no kavua at all, not midaraisa, not midarabanan. Everyone agrees that there's kavua midarabanan in the case of zvachim. How did we get to that? What were the rules that were governing all this? So according to Tosfos, the emphasis was on the issue of nikar versus not nikar. According to the Rashba, the emphasis was on whether it's isn't epiklios hetter. But l'chora, we have a big, big problem, according to the Shittas Rashba. That model of the Rashba, that it's ultimately, it's bittel that starts the ball rolling, and once you apply bittel, memela kavur can't kick in. L'chora, one has to raise a fundamental question. This is a very, very lomdish question. I'm just abrisk v'chakira about what the nature of kavua is all about. The Torah tells us it's chiddush, it's kavua, and therefore you don't rely on rov. Basically, the Torah is saying, in kavua, rov falls by the wayside. Yesh lachor. What's the nature of that din? There's a kosher of halacha. See, whatever you want to call it, kach nemar halacha, that in the case of kavua, the regular rules of rov break down. Whatever you think is necessary for kavua to happen, but once you have a situation that the halacha has been identified as kavua, the rules of rov don't apply. One can understand this in one of two ways. Either one can understand that the Torah is telling us that this is not a rov. The Torah is dictating to us what is a rov, what's not a rov. Rov is not determined by the statisticians. The rov is defined by the Rabbana Shalom, and this, you don't have a rov. The number, just make believe the rov is command to lay sedomi. It's as if you didn't add up the numbers properly. The Torah says, sorry, even though according to the mathematicians, I got an 85% chance of good. I have a 9 out of 10 chances that I walked into the kosher store. Tough luck. That's not, you got the wrong one. You don't know how to count, says the Torah. That's not a rov. No. It's not that it's not a rov. What do you joke? Who determines rov? The mathematicians. Do the math. You add up the numbers. Of course, the rov. It's not a rov. It's a rov, but the Torah doesn't give you the right to rely on this kind of a rov. Now, again, without the parish of rov in the Torah, would have said, how can I find any surah? I take a chance. It's too dangerous, too risky. So I have no, you know, we only allowed to rely on rov when the Torah gives us the right to rely on rov. Otherwise, we have to be very nervous. We have to be chashish for a lot of things in this world. It's too risky. Life is too risky. We can't take a chance we're eating chazir. We can't take a chance we're going to get sick. We can't get a lot of things. So we have to err. Our entire starting point in life is err on the side of caution. The risks are too great. Hello, what? The Rebbeinu Shalom gave us a parish of rov. It happens to be that the Rebbeinu Shalom said that rov doesn't always work. That even though the rov is there, it doesn't matter. You're not allowed to rely on rov. Let's say the mashal, as we spoke about on the Wednesday night shiur, in Pikuach Nefesh, so the rule is the Hochul Pikuach Nefesh Chayah Rov. You're not allowed to rely on rov in Pikuach Nefesh. What does that mean practically? What that means is that the starting point is you're not allowed to take any risks because there's a mitzvah of Mishpat and Lashon section. There's a mitzvah of the Chayabim, there's a din of Pikuach Nefesh, there's a din of Mishpat and Lashon section. We have to be shomi yaguf from any possible fear. Eloah, the Torah tells us that Acharam Atos, rely on Rov. But the same Torah tells us, sorry, Hapesh Yitro Pesh Osar, that Rov doesn't play a role in Pikuach Nefesh, Lahochum Pikuach Nefesh, Rov, to Sugin Yen Mesech Azuma. So once we now have the din, that Lahochum Pikuach Nefesh, Aharov, so then we go back to the starting point was that you have to be chashish. You have to be chashish for everything. Now, again, even within the sugya of the Hochum of Kukhan Sharov, that's what we mentioned on Wednesday night, Shift of some Sefer, even that, yesh kvubadom. There comes a certain point where even in issues of Pikuach Nefesh, we're allowed to rely on certain degree roles. And those are sugyas of Echad Mini Aleph, those are sugyas of Shavu B'Slav Hashem, those are very, very complicated sugyas, as to figure out at what point do we say that something has entered into the possibility of that you're liable to lie in that kind of a role. So it's a remarkable, the famous did of Shavu B'Slav Hashem. So a person is allowed to do certain activities that are considered to be within the realm of lack of concern. Everybody knows that you get into a car, there is a 0.00000% chance that you may be putting your life at risk. But we assume that that's okay. You're allowed to do that. Why? So the answer is there are sugyas in the Gemara. You promise that show B'Slav Hashem that there are certain activities you're allowed to do, and you don't even have to be concerned about those very, very insignificant risks of B'Slav Hashem. Where do you draw that line? That's a very, very tough question. That's a complicated sugya. That's part of what the sugya that we'll be going on right now. That's part of the reason why some of the decisions that have to be made have to be weighed through the eyes of Hilchos Pikuach Nefesh. That's why some people get surprised and they say, it comes out almost like sometimes you have a situation where the Rabbanim are being more machmir than some other people. And the answer is because we view the world through the world of Torah. We look at things through the prism of Torah. So the question whether or not I should have an minyan is a halachic question. So that has to be defined through halachic eyes. Like all other areas of halach, you have to get input from the experts. The same way that if somebody asks me, if it's nidishayla, so I have to call the OBGYN. I have to get all the medical opinion, all the medical information. But then it's a Rav, so the Rav has to pass in the shayla. He said that it's a tricky shayla. It's a very complicated shayla. I have to try to figure out this. So and sometimes it is possible we have different opinions about this. We have different opinions in other applications of halacha. But getting back to that story, so that's the same kind of issue that we're raising in terms of kavua. That the starting point is that you have to be chosh for everything, anything and everything. And what? Now the Torah gives us a parasha of rov, but now the Torah takes it away from us. The Torah yanks it away and says, but kavua, sorry, no heter of rov. So does it mean that statistics aren't there? Of course the statistics are there. But does it mean the mathematicians are lying? Of course they're telling us the truth. But it's irrelevant. It's true but irrelevant because the halacha says you're not allowed to rely on these kinds of rovs. So what is pshat in this hafkos of Torah? What's pshat in this chinish of Torah that kavua somehow trumps everything? Does kavua trump everything because we now say we do it, the math doesn't add up? The halacha declares the math doesn't add up? Or not? No. The halacha declares the math does add up. It adds up. It's true. The math is 100% true. It's true, but irrelevant. The same that's true, but irrelevant. If someone would come to say to me, there's a 90% chance that what you're doing is safe, I would say, you're still not allowed to do it because I'm not arguing your statistics. And it could be the doctor may say to me, yeah, it's 90% chance. Go for it. It's okay. That's the doctor can tell me what the statistics are if he knows, if he has any way of knowing that, I'm not sure. But if he can inform me to what the medical knowledge is, and I don't mean me personally, and then Rob has to take that medical knowledge and figure out what does the halacha therefore say? How are we supposed to act in light of that in that medical knowledge? Sometimes you have a situation in halacha that there's a sugya in Maseches Nida, where the Gemara talks a little bit about the nemanos of the rofim, about the doctors. So the Rishon raised there are two different issues about nemanos and rofim. He says there's one issue is, do they have nemanos? Are they trying intentionally to lie to us? So that's we hope and pray that's not the sugya that we're dealing with right now. We hope that everybody who's expressing a professional opinion is trying their hardest to tell us the truth. But in the days of Rishonim, that wasn't always true. I mean, some guy, some quack, walks into town and says he's a doctor, and he starts telling us the whole information about a chosnita. So maybe he's lying through his teeth. We have no idea. He's not Jewish, he's not from. Maybe he's not lying. He has no interest in telling us the truth. So that's one concern Rishonim talk about. But then Rishonim talk about, even in a situation where we don't doubt his honesty. He's one of us. He's an Echad, he's a firm fellow. But the Rishonim raised the question, does he know what he's talking about? I mean, just because he's telling us something, is his information accurate? So that's a totally different angle of the Shaila. So you have to, this is a lot of the things that go into the mix of these kinds of decisions. It says we have to get the medical information. We have to try to see, is the medical information really accurate? Is there reason to believe that the medical information itself is not 100% accurate? Are there different opinions in the medical information? What do you do in a halacha when you have different opinions in medical information? These are sugi shleimus. These are sugyas. They appear in Chos Nida, they appear in Chos Yom Kippurim. And now the job of Rabbanim is to try to extrapolate those principles, to try to apply them properly into other kinds of scenarios. But again, that same kind of a model exists now in the Parashat Kavua. So we're not quite sure what, wherein lies the chisar of kavua? Is kavua a chisar in the statistics, in the math? Was Kavua admitting, we're conceding the math is 100% right, we're admitting that's 90% right, we're not questioning the mathematicians here, we're saying that we can't do anything with your math because the Torah says that you're not allowed to rely on Rove under these circumstances. So that very, very doctrine, very, very fine line of Lomdish of Kakira as to what Kavua is not, that's going to become part of the next step of our sugya to try to understand the Rashba. Maybe just coming, you know, just to whet our appetite for Tuesday we can pick up. So there's a fascinating discussion that Piyazim Rebbe Chonam Ha'asim, I put on the Ramah Komis in the 70 Ramah Komis, those who want to get a jump start on it, over Shabbos. It's fascinating on two fronts. It's fascinating because number one, it's a very heavy-duty Lomdash Achidah, which are brisket Torah in the man, brisket Achidah within Kavua. But it's fascinating historically because Rebbe Chonam recounts a conversation that he had with a young boy, a young yeshiva bachar, whose name was Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, Rav Chaim's son, the Rav's father. He quotes him, you can take a quick look, I didn't talk the whole door for this till next week. If you look at the 7th of the Ramah Komos, it's four lines in, the very, very sharp young man, Ma, he calls him Mr. He wasn't a Rav, he was a teenager. Rav Moshe ben Rav Ragon, Rav Chaim, a lady Soloveitchik, said something. The Rav's father, Chaim's son, is quoted by Rav Chanan. Rav Chanan was talking to him, schmoozing him, and learning, and he gave him a beautiful pshat. Rav Moshe gave Rav Chanan a beautiful pshat. Rav Chanan incorporated into his sefer, and back and forth, that shtickle turn, that discussion between Rav Moshe Soloveitchik as a young teenager and Rav Chanan, who was a very senior Hashim at the time. So that sets the stage, but for the next part of the sugya. But on Tuesday, we'll come back to the sugya of Kavua. Keep in mind that Lomdish Chakira, what Kavua is, what Kavua is not. Okay, I wish I have a wonderful.
A question about the Rashba. The Rashba. According to the Rashba, is Kavua Adin Daraisa or Adin Darabot?
Yeah, absolutely, Adin Daraisa. No question about it. Adin Daraisa. Sometimes, in a situation where it's bottom in a Torah and it's not bottom in the Rabbana, then it becomes the Rabbana. But the Ink Adin of Kavua is Adin Daraisa. Like in the case where there's no pittle, in the case of the stores, there's no
pittle
at all, so it's
there, I said. They threw in choshev, they know
choshev. So that chumr the rabbanon to say kavua by dvarim chashuvim, that's the rabbanon. But if and when there's no pittle, the case of the stores, there's no pittle even in the rice, not even at Arobas. So when there's no pittle the rice, then kavua is the rice. When there is pittle the rice, it's just not the rabbanon, then kavua is the rabbanon. Okay. So the answer to your question is sometimes yes, sometimes no. Okay, those who followed the Matzah Shabbos Shira, we'll be back in the regular time, Yitzchem, tomorrow night. There was a little bit of a suffix last week, but as of now, I think we're back in the regular 9:45 tomorrow night, Matzah Shabbos Shira. Okay, wish everyone a wonderful, wonderful Shabbos. Thank you.